The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
All right, one of the heavy hitters for a heavy hitting team is coming on here. Michael Schwartz of ESPN. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Nate. Always good to be on here.
Yeah.
A lot more fun to talk about them than the first times we started doing these.
That's true. That's true. Though, I mean, that loss in game seven, obviously, I mean, that's got to linger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A little bit. I don't want to get too sidetracked because we're going to talk about this year. But, you know, I think it is important to go back and look at what it was that felled this Suns team that I think for many was the championship favorite right up until the end of the first quarter of game seven against the Mavs. I thought, you know, I talked about with Hollinger afterwards, like it was basically, to me, I couldn't remember a more shocking game in all of NBA history. It must have just been like a crazy feeling. But I guess maybe now, because everyone is back again, like you felt like, oh man, they can't bring the same team back. Like they're going to have major changes. I'm glad that they brought everyone back. I'm glad that in the end, they didn't totally overreact to this, that loss.
Oh, yeah, completely agree. Just from the standpoint of the big question mark about whether you're going to bring him back or not is DeAndre Ayton. And if you don't bring him back, you're probably replacing him with a Miles Turner, a Jakob Poeltl, a center of that ilk. And that would really be a pretty significant downgrade and I think would hurt their immediate prospects as well as their future prospects. So I agree with that it was smart not to completely overreact to that. And there were extenuating circumstances. There was certainly some COVID going through the whole organization. Not that that completely excuses whatever that performance was. Because like you said, it was just absolutely shocking. The game was over, really. It felt like in the first 6 minutes, certainly by the end of the first quarter, it was. And that's just not this team we've seen all year. It's been a team that's made great comebacks, a lot of close games. They just don't get blown out like that. It was honestly just completely shocking from what we've seen all year. That it really, the last five games, obviously they were up 2-0. They lose four of the last five games. It just didn't really look quite like them. They didn't have that same pizzazz. Chris Paul seemed to be dealing with something. He certainly wasn't nearly the player he was even going back to the first round. He had a 14 for 14 game in round one, and then in round two he was pretty ineffective. So I agree. It's so easy to overreact to playoff performances. And then the other thing, in a situation like that, you can say, hey, you just ran into a bad matchup. It wasn't a bad matchup. The Suns had won nine straight against this team. The Suns have dominated this team really since Luka and Ayton were drafted. This has been really one of their best matchups. And so you can't blame it on that. It was just, like you said, one of the more surprising outcomes in NBA history. I don't know about the most. I'm sure we could find one more surprising outcome.
In terms of,
certainly was up there.
In terms of the outcome in one individual game.
I'm with you.
From a series standpoint, I mean, there have been bigger upsets for sure. I mean, the one thing I pointed out before that too, because I did pick it to go seven, although I picked the Suns to win, was we hadn't seen the Suns against like this iteration of the Mavericks. No Kristaps Porzingis, Spencer Dinwiddie, an empowered Jalen Brunson playing five out for probably 35 minutes a game or so. And I thought, like, this Mavericks team was very, very hard to play against, to the point where I actually wrongly picked them against the Warriors in the next series, and the Warriors actually ended up handling them pretty easily in the end. I guess the place to start then is just, you know, what really went wrong in that Mavs series, as we're, again, I mean, we'll talk about the regular season, obviously, but since we're on the subject, what went wrong and what are the chances that that won't go wrong again, because they pretty much are bringing back the same team.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing with the Suns last year is they rely on and two creators to create their offense, right? Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Chris Paul just wasn't himself. The Mavericks saw that, and they were able to put a ton of pressure on Booker, make him get the ball out of his hands, make someone else beat you. And there really wasn't anyone. On top of that, 2 years ago, Campaign was just a revelation off the bench, and he could do a decent job of beating some of that pressure. And he was also nowhere to be found. Obviously, a pretty bad defensive matchup in that series for him as well. And they just didn't have that third person who could step up and create offense when they were hard trapping Book all the time, and when Chris Paul just wasn't himself.
Yeah, I thought there, like, I mean, Chris Paul obviously struggling was number one. I mean, the Mavs really shut them down in the last five games of that series in a way that I didn't think was possible, particularly when you saw how badly they killed him in the first two games. And certainly there was unsustainable mid-range shooting. Like, Danny and I actually made a bet on what the Suns percentage would be from mid-range for the rest of the playoffs after game two. And you know, because I think to that point it had been like 60% or something in the series, and you know, they ended up being like kind of right around league average, if memory serves, like about 40% the rest of the series. And they, you know, that wasn't going to be good enough for them. And then Chris, you know, he, by the end, he wasn't even really able to get any shots off at all. And so you just wonder about, especially when guys are injured who are old, it's like, all right, well, they might not be injured next year, but they're also a year older, or maybe they're injured, more likely to be injured because they're old. And so you never know, really. You know, James, I'm kind of going through this with James Harden right now too, trying to project him in Philly, of just what they're going to be as they get older, but also potentially healthier at the same time. I do think, though, the Mavs exposed some concern with this team. You know, they didn't really have a way to deal with Luka in the end. You know, I think there have been the opinions of DeAndre Ayton defensively have kind of waxed and waned, and I thought they weren't really able to figure out a way to deal with Luka and the five out, which, you know, it's hard. Like, really, you have to be able to switch. That's the only way you can deal with that. And they did a great job of going at Chris Paul, who I've said for years that teams should go at him more with quicker players and individual defense, that you know, his reputation has kind of prevented that. And you know, Jalen Brunson really was able to attack him pretty well, it seemed like, or Luka was. And you know, if they got Ayton switched on the perimeter, Luka was able to beat him in that game seven. So I think they do have like a few structural weaknesses on defense in the playoffs that were a little bit of a concern to me. You know, so it's that's one thing why I was a little bit lower on them as a playoff team than maybe some people were.
Yeah, and in the past, Mikal Bridges has done a fine job. I actually looked at the numbers right before the series, and it wasn't as good as I seem to remember. With the Suns having won 9 straight.
Yeah.
I guess narratively, I remembered him doing better against Luka than the numbers actually backed up. And yeah, like you said, just a tough matchup. He couldn't take him one-on-one, which, you know, okay, you can't take one of the best two or three players in the world one-on-one. That's not the biggest problem in the world. But yeah, that's really when it comes down to why the Suns lost the last 2 years. They ran into Luka and Giannis. They just didn't have an answer for those guys. And it's a problem insofar as you're going to see them again, but a lot of teams don't have answers for those two, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. And I mean, you know, Mikal Bridges, there aren't many other guys I would rather have guarding Luka Doncic, but there's just only so much that one guy can do when you can just set a screen. And, you know, you can't put you on the ball with Luka. He's going to carve that up instantly.
Oh, yeah.
With his size and the steam he gets on his passes to the weak side. And obviously, you know, Dallas got hot from three at times too. Like, I'm not going to tell you that if they play that series 100 times that the Suns are going to lose more than half of it. I don't think that's the case, probably. I think the one thing maybe this offseason you would say they could have done was try to get a little bit more athletic on the perimeter. Try to bring in maybe a Jeremy Grant, but it didn't seem like they really, you know, the Pistons were trying to not take back salary in that deal. It seemed like that deal with Portland was kind of preordained. The Suns certainly could have had the firepower to go get it. It was one Milwaukee first rounder that the price ended up being, but then there was also the salary issue as well. So, you know, someone like that, but I think ultimately to bring back a team that won 64 games is pretty good. What do you see as we go into this year now for this regular season? Like, Like, what are some of the big themes that you're going to be watching with this group?
I mean, I think the number one theme is, what does DeAndre Ayton add to his game? Obviously, that's been the biggest, well, besides the Kevin Durant flirtations, the biggest storyline for the Suns this summer was the DeAndre Ayton restricted free agency, which of course he ends up signing an offer sheet with Indiana that got matched within minutes. And, you know, DA has seemed the last 2 years sort of taken a backseat of his own offense so that he can go set hard screens, roll hard, do what a Chris Paul offense demands. And he's done a really nice job of it, but he certainly has talked about wanting to have more of a role. So I'm curious to see what he adds. Can he add any creation? Can he take guys off the dribble? There were a time or two in the New Orleans series where he did that. And I was like, whoa, where is that? I haven't seen too much of that from him. But if you have that in your bag, that kind of changes what I think of him a little bit. So I think DeAndre Ayton is where I'm going to start. And then
to Cam Johnson, I think Ayton, like, this season needs to be a lot about DeAndre Ayton. Like, I think
absolutely,
they won the 64 games last year. They know what they can do in the regular season. It's not going to be as important. You know, Chris Paul, there's ever more reason to preserve him at this point in time. Let's see whether DeAndre Ayton can actually create some offense. Like, let's just throw in the ball and fucking see what happens. Like, and if it's not that great, okay, fine. We know that now, but let's give him the chance. Let's see if he can work on actually drawing some fouls and using his power game a little more in addition to that preternatural touch that he has. I think that's a great point. I think they should be emphasizing him absolutely as much as possible. And hopefully that will help to smooth over any ruffled feathers that might remain from the restricted free agency process as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because in the playoffs, like you said, in the regular season, you don't really need it. But there's times in the playoffs where maybe, Booker's injured for most of the Pelican series and you need someone else to step up. Or that Dallas series, Chris Paul's not quite himself. You got a team that's not very big. Like, that was a series where Ayton really should have feasted and he just never did. So I think that's by far the number one thing. And then just what I was going to say, what can Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges add as far as especially shot creation? We know what those guys can do. Cam's a elite three-point shooter. Mikal's a good three-point shooter. Those are really good role players, but can they elevate themselves to be kind of a role player plus type of player on offense? Defensively, you know exactly what you're getting out of Mikal Bridges. Second in defensive player of the year voting last year, but just what more can he give you on the offensive end?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Getting to that mid-ranger as well. I think actually the number one thing I'd like to see from Bridges is just upping his three-point volume. He's definitely such a good shooter, and I mean that probably applies to the whole team, quite frankly. I mean, he actually was down shooting the three last year, 37%, and only 3.9 per 36 minutes, which with some of the other guys that they have, he's got like kind of a long release out in front of his body that he's worked hard to speed up. So I mean, maybe you say, hey, it's only 37%, he only took 3.9 for 36 minutes, like maybe there isn't more there. But I think just as an entire team, they need to work on getting more three-pointers up. And I think maybe this Dallas series can be the impetus to do that, because this Dallas team does not have premium defensive talent. Like, they have a really good system and they stopped the Jazz in round one and they stopped Phoenix in round two, but the Warriors just completely lit them up in the next round. And part of that was just the brilliance of Steph and what a unique force he is. But you could see that when you could actually spread the floor against these guys, they didn't have the athleticism or the rim protection to compensate. So that's, I'd like to see that from Bridges. For Cam Johnson, I think, all right, maybe he can get better on offense. Fine. I think he probably will. He's got to get better on defense. Like, he got lit up in the playoffs, which is a big surprise. Like, the whole theme was, hey, this guy's been like getting way better than expected on defense. And like, that's part of why he's so playable. And like, he's going to get an extension because of that. Like, they just went at him. Both teams did, the Pels and even more so the Mavs. So that's the biggest thing for me, is like, he's got to get better in individual defense.
Yeah, and he might be the starting power forward this year. I know we're going to get into that. Yeah. I think he should be, certainly long term. Definitely needs to hold up a little bit better there. And just real quickly back to that Maverick series, it came down to math in some respects. The Mavs were shooting their million threes, especially those games in Dallas, and the Suns are combating that with mid-range, and it worked most most of the year. I mean, he won 64 sure. games largely doing that. But it came to that point in the playoffs where you got Dorian Finney-Smith hitting six threes, and you just can't keep up with that kind of math.
What else is on your mind as we go into this season?
I mean, just really the hangover from that Dallas game. Just what, you know, the last 2 years have really been such a revelation. Obviously, going into 2 years ago, no one really knew what to expect from this team. And the whole year sort of felt like the plucky underdogs that become the two seed in the West, second best record in the NBA. And then last year was those, lost in the finals. This is our revenge year. We're taking it out on everyone. There really isn't a lot to prove in the regular season. And I think that a lot of people aren't going to take them seriously, no matter what. They could win 60 games again, and people will say, well, what about the Dallas series? So I'm curious to see how they handle it. They were going hard the whole regular season. You know, they wanted every one of those 64 wins. They wanted the franchise wins record, which they did get. You'd see them on the second night of a back-to-back where some teams would be resting their stars, and maybe you should have been resting your stars, and they're going hard, and they're winning games in Denver and Miami. They're winning schedule losses more than once. Yeah. In Brooklyn, too. They, you know, games that you just don't expect them to really have much of a chance, and they go ahead and do it. I'd almost want them to peel it back a little bit, you know, like give Chris Paul those second nights of back-to-backs off. I know he hates that, but just the regular season wins just doesn't matter nearly as much as peaking at the right time. And this team did the exact opposite. They played their worst basketball at the worst time.
Yeah. And some of that, I mean, I think people forget that Booker missed almost the whole first round with a hamstring issue and came back early from that. He looked so good at the start of the Dallas series that you kind of forgot about that, but it seems like, you know, that started to wear on him as time went on as well. It's a sad commentary on today's NBA that basically every single one of these previews, like, hey, de-emphasize the regular season, like don't try so hard, winning 64 games, what kind of an idiot would ever want to do that, right? So that's too bad, but that's the reality of the incentive structure that's been put in front of these teams at this point. It is that time again, wedding season. Indochino's custom suits will have you walking into a wedding looking like $1 million, feeling like $1 million, because their suits are custom made to fit you perfectly. You can get a tailored fit from the comfort of your home. You can set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website, choose customizations without even leaving the house. Indochino was the official outfitter of my wedding. I got a tux from them. All my groomsmen got custom fitted sport jackets, and I'd like to think we all look great. Order your custom suit now. Be ready for wedding season, whether it's at home or in person at a showroom New Year, which I actually recommend. That's what I did. An Indochino style guide can walk you through all of the amazing customizations that they have. The lapels, the lining, single-breasted, double-breasted. You can feel the fabrics in person. That's definitely the best way to do it, in my opinion. But you can also do it from home as well. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com. Use that familiar Capspace code to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com. Indochino. Indochino.com. Don't forget that Capspace code to let them know you came from us. Renters, you ever feel like you're stuck in this loop of rent payments, just watching your money vanish into thin air? It's time to turn that rent game around and start earning some serious rewards. That's where Built Rewards comes in. Built is breaking ground as the first rewards program that hooks you up with points on your rent. Even if you're still rocking the old school rent check vibes, Built Rewards has got your back. They'll mail the check for you. It's like having a personal rent paying assistant. Every month, pay your rent and watch the Built points roll in. Use points to jet off on a dream vacation. Put your points towards a flight or hotel stay with 500 plus airlines and 700,000 plus hotels and properties. You can also use your points towards a future rent payment or towards a future down payment on a home. Pay rent hassle-free through the Built Rewards app. Your rent game just got a major upgrade. Earn points by paying rent right now when you go to joinbuilt.com/capspace. That's joinbuilt, B-I-L-T, joinbuilt.com/capspace. Don't forget that /capspace URL. I'll add another big theme that I'm focused on, and that's just the aging and the role of Chris Paul. And, you know, he certainly had one of the greatest clutch seasons ever. This is one of the greatest clutch teams ever a year ago. And in that Pelican series, he was adding to his legacy the first two games of the Dallas series. And then he really fell off. And I thought that Dallas did the best job of any team I've ever seen attacking the weaknesses of Chris Paul. He talked about defense, but then also on offense. They didn't guard him. When he didn't have the ball, they didn't guard him. And if you go and look at some of his stats, like with regard to that, it's crazy. He 57% of all of his possessions that he took a shot on were in the pick and roll last year in the regular season. Less than 10% were out of spot ups, and no dribble spot ups. He took, I think, like 45 spot up jump shots all season in the regular season. And he's a good shooter. He just, like, it's kind of funny, again, to bring it back to James Harden. He's kind of the same way. That's just like, Chris doesn't want to do that. Like, he wants to, he'll take the shot off the dribble, but he has to be wide open to take a spot up three. And if he's going to play off the ball more this year, we're talking about Ayton posting up more, and Cam Johnson and Bridges doing more, and you know, maybe you're going to transition more at the end of games into Booker doing more stuff. Like, Chris Paul's got to shoot the ball, like, when he's open. He's a good shooter. Like, he needs to just boost that. He needs to take two or three at least spot up three pointers a game, again, getting back to the idea that these guys don't take enough threes. So and you know, we'll see, like, his isolation numbers in the regular season weren't good last year either. Like, he kind of slipped a little bit there, and you know, didn't have as good of a season other than the clutch. And so I think, like, hopefully these young guys all take a step forward, and he can kind of save it more, even more to the clutch. But he still needs to shoot a three-pointer when he's open if that's going to be the strategy.
Yeah, no question. And you felt so many times in the Dallas series, just, hey, shoot the ball, Chris, shoot the ball, Chris. Like, you're, like you said, you're wide open. This is an elite shooter, and he just, for whatever reason, didn't want to. And that just plays into Dallas's hands, and with the lack of playmaking outside of Booker besides him, it just wasn't going to work for you.
Yeah. So, and then obviously just how effective he can be in the playoffs playing his usual game as well will be another one. And you know, for all these teams, you've got the rising tide of these young guys, but Chris, you know, I mean, he's aged better than just about any small guard in NBA history.
Yeah,
but you know, this, you still expect a slight drop off at least. All right, so is that it as far as kind of like major themes that we wanted to talk about here?
I think that's, yeah, I'd say so.
That's probably about it.
I mean, the other thing just that's kind of interesting, a lot of these guys at least had their names in the trade rumors, pretty much the whole team, it seems like, outside of Paul and Booker, just with the Suns being a team on Durant's preferred list. And, you know, even guy Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson were guys certainly in the crosshairs of it. DeAndre Ayton was very much in the middle of a lot of stuff before he signed his offer sheet. And it seemed like all the key players, Jay Crowder, certainly he's been liking Instagram comments and weird stuff like that, that you wonder if he wants to be there. So the continuity has been such a huge part. I mean, continuity is the story of this team, right? Like, they brought back everyone. Their biggest addition was Dario Saric, who's been with the team for 2 years. The guys they actually signed in free agency are probably third stringers. So just how much will that affect them? Granted, if your name's in trade rumors for Kevin Durant, I think you can understand that. Yeah. This is a guy who I think will end up as a top 10 player all time, certainly top 15. Very much understandable, but still, like, these guys are humans. You can't love hearing it. So I'm just wondering exactly how they'll react to some of that. It's probably nothing, but it's just one of those things that's a little bit in the back of my mind there.
Yeah, and you also have some guys, Saric on an expiring contract, Crowder on
a lot of guys
contract. So some of the lower level of guys, Shamet is on a contract that's not particularly desirable given where his playoff contribution was a year ago. Even with Devin Booker out, you know, he wasn't really able to contribute at the level that he would have been wanted. Torrey Craig, so they have a lot of salary that they could potentially move here for some of these lower level guys. Campaign might be another one as well. So and there's still the DeAndre Ayton thing too. If you, let's see, at the trade deadline, if KD wants out again, maybe DeAndre will get traded for him if he's playing really well, something along those lines. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting theme. And also the other thing that looms, of course, is the luxury tax, which I believe Robert Sarver has never paid. Am I correct about that?
No, they paid it in 9-10.
That's right.
But they haven't paid it since then. I don't know if they paid it before. If they paid any before that, it was small. This will certainly be their largest luxury tax bill as things stand.
And that's back with a much friendlier tax. And even, you know, back when they had teams that were championship contenders, they made a lot of tax avoiding moves back then. But right now the Suns are $17 million in the tax, $34 million tax payment, team salary plus tax of just over $200 million. And you certainly think that, particularly like Torrey Craig is probably not really going to play that much. I'm interested to see whether salary gets offloaded, what assets are required to do that, and can you do that in conjunction with getting back players who are going to help?
Right. I think they're definitely going to be active in the trade market, potentially, or at least in trade talks. You never know what'll come together. And the other key thing is, we all know from the Durant saga, the Suns own all their future first round picks. So they can give the full boat if they wanted to. Let's trade four firsts and three pick swaps. If for the right certain player that you've already mentioned, if DeAndre Ayton has a great year, with Durant still, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with that situation, but I think the Suns will be lurking for any player, between the luxury tax concerns, but which I hope aren't an issue. But like you said, you never know. Sarver's never paid it to this degree. And I think the Suns are definitely going to be active and looking for another creator and looking for ways to upgrade their team.
Yeah, and quite frankly, if they take Torrey Craig off this roster and trade him for nothing, they save $18 million. You know, it's probably a smart move to do that, just in general, to give up cash and seconds. I mean, obviously, once you're trading first, then you run into some issues.
Don't want to do that. Yeah. The Kurt Thomas situation can never happen again.
Oh, man. Yeah, for those who don't remember, they traded two first-round picks.
Brutal.
With Kurt Thomas. I think one of them became Serge Ibaka, if memory serves.
Yep.
To what was then the Sonics and Sam Presti and his rebuild right at the beginning.
And then they traded Thomas to the Spurs and got another. So they got three first round picks out of that. Great work for them. Yeah, not so much for the Suns.
I guess that's true. Yeah, the like getting something for the guy coming and going. That was like the first time that Sam did that. He's done that a lot in this iteration of the rebuild too. All right, let's talk a little bit about this rotation. Now, you alluded to potentially that they might change things up in the starting lineup, you think?
I think they're definitely going to look at it. Some of the weird Crowder stuff, I mean, just speculating, wondering if they know Cam's coming. I felt even last year, Cam Johnson probably was a starting caliber player and probably should have been there. I understand Crowder fits well with the starters and he's just such a sort of glue guy that maybe you start him and you have Cam finish. But the Suns lineup with Paul, Booker, Bridges, and Ayton, obviously those four are starting. We all know that. They're locked in. With Cam Johnson last year, they played 22 games together. They were 18-4. They had a plus 29.5 net efficiency. So still, it was a very small sample size. It was only 42 minutes. But still, I think that hints at how efficient this lineup can be. I mean, you've just got shooters everywhere. Like you said, the defense, especially if you've got a big four, you could kind of be in some trouble there defensively. But I think this is the Suns, certainly their best offensive lineup. And I think it's the lineup that I'd like to see closing games.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think it depends. You know, if you have someone that Jay Crowder needs to guard, I think that's...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's important. But, you know, one of the things too with, you know, and Crowder, like, he'll make plays around the basket just with as a help defender and getting some steals, which Johnson's not necessarily going to do. And so you know, Crowder's also a little bit older. It's interesting. If they extend Cam Johnson, yeah, then go ahead and start him. If they don't extend him, now you're like boosting his value in restricted free agency by starting him all year. But obviously that's not going to enter into Monty Williams thinking of what's going to win.
He won't care about that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that is a good point. We'll see if they get it done. I kind of feel like they won't, especially with all the future money on their books. And since pretty much everyone else has been extended, I'm sure they want to keep him definitely, but that definitely feels like one that's headed to RFA. Don't you think?
I do, particularly because it makes it much more difficult to trade him. I think that it would have to be an extremely team-friendly deal for the Suns to bite on that. So Crowder is probably your backup four.
Yep.
Then if you're starting Johnson or vice versa, how is the backup rotation in the backcourt going to shake out, you think?
I mean, I think it's going to be the same as last year with Campaign and Landry Shamet. I think both those guys really had down years And I think the Suns, they've certainly invested in them, Shamet in particular, to expect quite a bit more production. Obviously, they brought in Damian Lee from the Warriors. He certainly could figure in that. But I feel like Shamet's shooting, which was inconsistent at times last year, I think that's important enough that they're going to give him certainly another go at it. And they need campaign. I mean, it's not great that they're relying on him, but you saw that in the Dallas series where when Chris Paul struggled, if they weren't even going, they were going to Shamet. They weren't even going to campaign.
Yeah, they so played that, Booker that, at backup point guard.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you go back to last postseason, campaign was great against the Lakers when Chris Paul was out the two games with COVID. He stepped up huge against the Clippers, and they need that campaign. He was just a huge spark plug. And guy, one of the few guys who can really create for himself and others. And that didn't happen, certainly in the playoffs, and the regular season certainly was down as well. So I think that they need campaign to be back to what he was.
Or they need to make a trade, honestly.
If
he's not playing well, like, they can't go into the playoff with Chris Paul and Devin Booker as the only two guys on this team that can dribble.
No question.
And maybe Bridges can do enough, but like, even just to bring the ball up, right? I mean, that was another thing where Chris Paul was just getting hounded full court. And it's just like, they would do little things where he would give the ball up and then get it back in the front court. But then it's Devin Booker and, just the overall pressure that teams are going to try to bring against them in the playoffs. And there's a lot of good defensive teams in the West that are going to try and do that. Like, you just need to have someone that you trust to come in and be a secondary ball handler. And I think there are guys that they could potentially get on the trade market for that role. We haven't talked
even in free agency. I kind of think Schroeder could be interesting in that role. I'm a little surprised that he hasn't signed yet, or I don't know what his situation or what's going on with him. And you figure it would be a trade, but just you're looking at him like, man, Schroeder would have been someone who would have helped in that Dallas series. I don't know about defensively, but certainly offensively, to break some of that pressure, provide another ball handler. They very much could have used a player like that.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, and it just remains to be seen what kind of role he's willing to come in and accept. They're not going to pay him any more than the minimum, surely, even though they do have the mini mid-level available. Yeah. They're at 14 players right now with Jock Landale on a non-guarantee. Maybe Schroeder's thinking if he has a good Eurobasket, he'll have better offers. But yeah, I mean, Schroeder, for a team that had a good culture and then all of a sudden didn't, like, he's kind of known as like a first-class asshole around the locker room. So that's another issue. But you'd hope that with Monty and Chris Paul and company, you could deal with that. But maybe he just doesn't want to come in and compete with campaign.
He played well with Chris Paul in OKC that one year when Paul was there.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's so I guess
they've got the history.
Yeah, I think that it might be more on his end of not wanting to come in. I do think he could help them. I do agree with you on that. I guess before we continue on the rotation, we haven't really even talked about their best player, Devin Booker, which is a tribute to him, I guess, that he's just locked in. But what did you make of his season last year? And, are there some steps he can take forward? It's probably more going to be in the incremental range now with him getting into the prime of his career. But is there anything you think he realistically could get better at this season?
I mean, I agree with you. I think it's just incremental. I mean, in particular, his defense has just grown by leaps and bounds from what it was certainly as a rookie. I think just continuing to improve as a playmaker. He already is a very good one. I mean, he's averaged upwards of six, almost seven assists per game in his career before Chris Paul got there. So I think it's maybe adding a little bit more as a lead ball handler, becoming more of that role. But like you said, we haven't talked about him. Dude was fourth in MVP voting. I think he deserved that, every bit of it. I think he's largely the engine of the team. Like, I think sometimes Chris Paul gets too much of the shine, and that people don't see just because Booker was there when this team was terrible for several years, and Chris Paul comes in and all of a sudden they're a top two team in the West. I think that Booker doesn't quite get the shine for how much he's improved and what he's done for this team, and how much of this team's improvement is due to him.
Yeah, some interesting trends in his statistical profile. 2 years ago, 19-20, career high, 62% true shooting. That's been down in the 59-58 range. Still, for a guard, well above average and above the league average. Free throw rate, troubling decline from about 0.40 down to 0.2. 2-6 a year ago. I think he's someone who's been hurt a little bit by some of the changes in the rules, whether it's making it a non-shooting foul when you feel contact and throw something up on the perimeter, or the pump fake stuff jumping in. For whatever reason, that's gone down a little bit. But he was up to 38% from three last year.
Yeah, which, that's huge.
It's huge, but it's also a little bit, not quite an outlier, because he did have one other season that was in the high 30s, mm-hmm. but he's largely been below 35% other than that. So that's, can he consolidate those gains? That's probably number one to me.
Yeah. Because,
when a guy takes a big step forward for shooting, sometimes it's because he's better. Sometimes it's just, a little bit more luck. And can he up his three-point attempt rate a little bit, as the whole team kind of needs to do, I think, particularly during the regular season? That's another question I have about him.
So I will be honest, I tend to pack on the pounds a little bit during the winter, holiday season, not getting outside as much. So in springtime, I try to eat healthier, and I'm really excited to try Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Each meal is fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. This is going to be fantastic for me during the playoffs, when a lot of times I feel like I don't have time to eat healthy, and now I can choose from a number of their delicious but healthy options. I like to go keto. On occasion, they have that. They have vegan and veggie options as well. Here's what they've got for their keto weekly menu this week: sun-dried tomato chicken with zucchini noodles, spicy poblano beef bowl with roasted broccoli, chicken piccata with cauliflower mash and broccoli, or if you want to go their chef's choice weekly menu, jalapeno lime cheddar chicken, that sounds fantastic, Greek lemon chicken with roasted potatoes. This all sounds really, really good. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up, heat, and savor the good stuff. And they're also celebrating Earth Day all month long as well. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/dunked50, special code for this one. That's factormeals.com/dunked50, and use the code dunked50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code dunked50 at factormeals.com/dunked50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And, the Booker three-point shooting, the numbers have always really been baffling because, yeah. This is a guy who's going out there and winning three-point contests with his eyes closed practically. So, the numbers never made sense to me for what kind of shooter he seemed to be. And some of it is taking tough shots at the end of a shot clock, all that sort of thing that you need to do as a star player. But to me, it feels like those numbers finally caught up to what it feels like he should be as a shooter.
Yeah.
So, I agree completely. That's one of the huge things, that if consolidating those gains and three-point shooting and being putting up the kind of numbers that you'd think Devin Booker would from three, as opposed to those earlier career numbers where it was just kind of baffling that a guy who seems to be this good of a pure shooter and is such a good mid-range shooter just isn't statistically as good from three-point range.
Yeah, and I undersold him a little bit. He hasn't really been below 34% except for 1 year. But that's, he went from 34 to 38%. We'll kind of see.
Yeah, that's that. Enormous.
All right, let's see. Any other kind of rotation battles that Monty Williams is going to have to sort out here?
I'm just curious what Šarić's role is going to be exactly, because that's kind of the one piece you're inserting in there. I certainly expect him to be the backup center, but there, you assume with Ayton, there's not going to be a whole lot of those minutes. So are you playing him with Ayton too much? Are you going with the double bigs? And just how big of a role he's going to have? Because I think he's the one guy of the players they didn't have last season that could definitely definitely make the biggest impact. Whereas the Jock Landales, Damian Lee, certainly Josh Okogie, I don't think they're going to necessarily crack the rotation.
Yeah, Torrey Craig is in that deep bench role as well. Although I think all of those guys can have moments with this group potentially in the regular season. Yeah, the backup center, Biombo, they signed him at midseason.
Yeah.
And he had some good games. I thought he actually was pretty good as a switch defender at times in the playoffs. Yeah. So that was an interesting aspect of his game. And all of a sudden, playing with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, he's able to catch the ball and finish, which was a big problem for him. But they had 2 years ago, for those who don't remember, this alchemy where the numbers were unbelievable on that second unit with Šarić at center. I don't think that he would have been a great matchup against Milwaukee. He went down in game one of that series, although it was so close. Maybe just a couple of threes here and there could have made a difference. And you
know, they're playing Frank Kaminsky at center, though. So I don't think he would have been worse.
It's a good point. that is a very good point. So, and just to have an option to play that five out style, just a little bit more versatility, particularly in the regular season. Now, Šarić, I think, has his own defensive issues, particularly coming back from the ACL, and they're going to really work him in slowly. He's gone from 0 to 60 in this Eurobasket right now. This is his first action since the ACL, and obviously, you know, that's a tough tournament to just jump right back into in terms of competitive play. But I think he can give them a different look, and I like the ability to go with either Biombo, just the bigger size guy, or with Šarić, and see if you can get more penetration to the basket with the space that Šarić would provide as a backup five, because that's another thing that this team, they shoot an incredible percentage at the rim, but they don't actually get there all that often.
Yeah, no question. It'll be interesting to see what he can do. A lot. Also, I think Campaign played a lot better. Like you said, the bench was overall pretty good with Šarić 2 years ago. So I think that might help having that five out guy, having a guy who's just a really good connector, really good in Monty's system will be helpful. And I agree. I like having the different looks you can throw out, because like when you play Milwaukee, you'd rather have Biombo in there certainly than Šarić. I feel like he'd be more helpful if that were to be a series again.
Any of these deeper bench guys that they have intrigue you at all?
Yeah, Landale actually does intrigue me a little bit. I don't expect him to play much unless there's injuries, but I feel like he also fits the system, can shoot it a little bit. Maybe even like a mini Šarić can do some of the same things that he does, give them that sort of a look that they didn't have last year. So he intrigues me, but I don't know. I feel like there's, you know, the season's not going to come down to those guys.
Yeah, Josh Okogie was a starter at times in Minnesota when they really desperately needed his defense. He is an absolute impact player in transition and making plays from the guard position defensively, but he just has never been able to shoot the ball at all. Yeah. Is there a possibility that getting set up in this Phoenix system that he could start to make shots? Like, I think so. And then he could be a really valuable player, because they don't really have, other than McHale, like anybody who can do any kind of ball hawking, getting into guys on the perimeter, forcing turnovers.
Right.
You know, they're just much more a solid positional defense. Like, they weren't really like making a ton of plays defensively. So he's always intrigued me. I would have liked him to go to a team that maybe could play, you know, play him in that kind of Bruce Brown role, which is probably not going to happen with me, but maybe it could if they're going Šarić at center on the second unit. And then maybe you could have Okogie as that screener going downhill for some big finishes. You know, he can still attack off the dribble pretty well. He was a two guard growing up. So, and then Damian Lee, if he makes shots, which is, you know, that can kind of wax and wane over the course of his career. I think he's better defensively than Shamet. He's a good cutter, smart player, like knows where to be. Shamit's obviously the better pure shooter. You can run more stuff for him. But I just think Lee, it's been lost that he actually really contributed to this Warriors team the last couple of years. Like, I think if he can make shots, which is possible, I just like him as a cutter and connector type of player. So as a guy who can step in capably, you know, I like him. I think he might actually be better than Shamit. We'll see about that. So there are some intriguing guys. I mean, they have good depth on this team. I thought like Okogie and Lee and Biombo for minimum signings is pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Lee in particular, we saw what he did all year with the Warriors. If Booker's out for 2 weeks and you need to move Shamet up and put or Lee and put Lee in your rotation, I don't think you would. I mean, you'll obviously miss a beat not having Booker, but I think that that's something that's at least sustainable in the regular season.
All right, what are the big strengths for this team that we haven't hit on yet? Obviously, there's the pick and roll play, the mid-range shooting. I think everyone kind of knows that, but anything that we haven't hit on too much yet?
Well, I mean, just to say, we've hit on it a little bit, but this team was unbelievable in clutch time last year. They were 33-9 in games that went to clutch time. It was the fourth best record in clutch time over the last 25 seasons. The teams ahead of them, you've heard of them. The 16 Warriors, they were okay. The 07 Mavericks, they were at least very good in the regular season, not so good in the playoffs, won 67 games.
There are some analogs between that 07 Mavericks team and this Suns team, I would say.
Yes, that is unfortunately true. There really are. And then the other team is the 13 Heat, which I think might be LeBron's best team ever. So some absolute heavy hitters in that department. Obviously, Devin Booker and Chris Paul were among the league leaders in shooting percentage in the clutch. And this was a team that played a lot of close games and just took over. Like every time the game was close in the fourth quarter, you felt like they were going to win. And this is kind of an underrated stat that some people might not realize, especially with how the season ended. The Suns did not lose any games when they were leading after three quarters. They were 53-0. It's the second most wins without a loss behind only the bubble Lakers. And the problem was they never had any fourth quarter leads in that Dallas series, at least those four games they lost. So this was a team that just did not blow leads, was incredibly good in the clutch. And, you know, you feel like it's because of Booker and Paul, you feel like it's a sustainable thing and not like a blip. They were also good the year before, not quite as good, but they're certainly good the year before in the clutch. So I think that's just sort of part of their identity.
Yeah. And in that Pels series in particular, even without Devin Booker, the way Chris Paul is controlling it. And if you're a team that can't defend with versatility, like, and you're playing like a drop center or something, like, you're just dead in the clutch against these guys. You're just hoping that they miss shots. I mean, I think it was that game four, I want to say, which is the one that they won.
Yeah, they won game three against the Pelicans.
Yeah, I think it was that one where you just, you could see Willie Green, who's obviously very familiar with this group, just dialing up every different coverage. And Chris Paul's like, oh, you're going to do that? Well, I'm going to just attack this weakness that you just opened up instead. And so, yeah, I do think there is something sustainable about it. Although, if you look at those teams that you mentioned, they weren't like amazing in the clutch in other years, right? Like the Warriors added Kevin Durant and had like a terrible clutch season the year after.
Yeah.
That. 73-9 year. You know, that Heat team, I can't remember what happened then. That Dallas team actually had a run of pretty good clutch performances over the years. But in any event, they're not going to be quite as good, I don't think. But I still
Hell yeah. There's always a little regression to the mean in that kind of situation.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that, but that's going to be fascinating of like how much that regresses during the regular season. And we didn't really ever, like, it did sustain, I guess, into the postseason. We never saw. Like they lost a series without ever getting to clutch time, which, you know, it's kind of important to be good enough to get to clutch time to begin with. Like that's a bigger problem than losing clutch games, you might say. But yeah, we never really got a great answer of how that was going to play in the playoffs. Certainly though, I mean, some of the mid-range shooting numbers are just like, there's no way they can sustain in the clutch, right? Yep. I mean, it's just, you know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker are like 70% true shooting in the clutch. Like, it's just, you can't sustain
that.
Like, a lot of it, I mean, I think they deserve a lot of credit for getting great shots in the clutch. Like, I think that part of it is what makes it so unsustainable, but the conversion of those great shots, like, you can't maintain the level that they had last year.
And then the other strength, you've hit on it there. It's just an elite mid-range shooting team, scoring team. They had the third most mid-range points, the second best field goal percentage. One of the teams they're behind in both stats is the Nets, which is, so you're talking about KD and Kyrie Irving. Anyone else besides that, they're better in the mid-range department. And I know you could say, is that necessarily a good thing to be so elite mid-range? But I think it's interesting. While so many teams are going away from it, and you have teams actively preventing it, and you have all these defenses fixated on making you take mid-range shots, the Suns are like, okay, sure, thank you, I'll take these mid-rangers. Obviously, there's issues with how that holds up in the playoffs when you're playing the math game of 2 versus 3. But if you're talking about strengths of this team, there's no question that ability to score from the mid-range is up on that list.
Yeah, you can also throw avoiding turnovers. I mean, this as a Chris Paul team, and that's another one where they just do a fantastic job with that. And just their overall system basketball, I mean, just their consistency, and just in the regular season, it's like they just, bad teams, they're just going to kill them. Like, whether maybe it might take until the clutch, but like teams that are just kind of a run-of-the-mill defense, like they can't deal with these guys. If you're not dynamic enough on the perimeter to really attack some of the weaker guys on this Suns team. Like, you're not going to be able to really get great shots defensively. I think they were number three in e-field goal percentage defense, you know, without a ton of shooting luck, if memory serves. How about weaknesses?
Well, one thing, they don't get the line, fourth fewest free throw attempts per game. And like you said, Booker's free throw rate was down. DeAndre Ayton has never gotten to the line the way you would expect a player that looks like him would, just so physical, or so physically imposing, but doesn't always play that way. It likes his middies and stuff like that. So I think that that's something that just hurts you in the playoffs when the other team's getting to the line more than you. And we saw that both of the last two postseasons. Certainly Giannis absolutely destroyed them. And then same thing in the Dallas series. So not getting to the line is certainly on that list.
Yeah. And then the three-point attempt rate, 27th in the NBA.
Definitely.
During the regular season, which again, you're like, if you just rank the shooters, like, all they have four guys who are plus shooters at their position, or at least average shooters at their position. And like, and even like when you watch someone like Crowder, you know, he's pretty aggressive shooting from three. So is Booker, you know, but then Paul and Bridges are not very aggressive shooting the three. And then, you know, you're not really getting much from Ayton. Maybe he'll shoot a few threes this year, but I think that's kind of, whether he can make that or not, it takes away from his inside game to have him standing out there. I would say actually their biggest weakness to me is the defensive versatility that at center. I still don't quite buy Ayton as a switch guy against the absolute highest level of guys, particularly early in the shot clock. You know, one of the things that Jason,
but who is against that those guys?
Yeah,
right.
No, that's true. Well, Kevon Looney did a pretty good job on him, right? Like
he did.
Some guys who can do it. You know, and they had some success. Another thing that they would do is they would get Ayton on Luka early in the possession, and then they would have Chris Paul's man come and screen. And so you've got Ayton way out on the floor, Luka going downhill at Chris Paul, and now you have no size. I mean, that's the other thing, is they really, other than Ayton, they don't have much rim protection. So that's another thing when you talk about versatility. It's not only, hey, can DeAndre Ayton stay in front of his man out on the floor, particularly if there's an early clock switch, but it's also who's going to be able to make plays beyond there. Now, Bridges could do that a little bit, but he's not a huge shot block guy. Like, they're not going to play Biombo and Ayton together, so they don't really have
hope.
Yeah, exactly. So
this has been the case the last 2 years. They're susceptible to bully ball. We saw that in the New Orleans series, and the New Orleans matchup's only going to get worse when it's Zion in there as one of the two guys, because Ayton can handle one of them, but you just don't have two players unless you do want to go double bigs, which hurts you on the other end of the floor. I'd hope you'd never go Ayton Biombo except in the most extreme circumstances. But
Ayton would love that. He would love to play the four, probably.
Yeah, he's wanted to do that since college, but he did do that in college. Yeah. He had Dusan Ristic next to him.
Yeah. Is he available? Could they sign him?
I think he's playing for Serbia right now. So he's a little busy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
But yeah, the lack of, Ayton is certainly a strong rebounder, but they don't really have that secondary strong rebounder, so they can be susceptible on the boards. Again, we saw that in the first round, one of the reasons that series was closer than it should have been. And I don't know what the solution is, because I don't necessarily think you want to go get a four who's a more prototypical four. I kind of like playing this way, but just if you've got Cam and Jay as your fours, you're going to be susceptible to some of that.
Yeah, and you can add in as well just the overall team athleticism. You know, other than maybe Bridges and Ayton, there's nobody on this team, unless you're going to go deep into the bench with Okogie, who you look at as like a real premium athlete at their position. So it is just a very interesting team. I think as we talk about them more and more, like, I think their playoff offense is like kind of built for, or their offense is kind of built for the playoffs. I don't think their defense really is that much. You know, and I would have loved to see what happened to, with them if they had gone up against Golden State as well. But they're also going to have to deal with the Clippers, who have a lot of athleticism, and hopefully we'll have Kawhi back. The Nuggets, that'll be fat. I mean, I expect that if they play the Nuggets in the playoffs, it'll be like 130 to 129 every game.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get into predictions here now. And I will give you a ton of credit. Had it not been for their clutch performance, you would have basically been right on the nail. You had 58 wins for this group. You thought they were going to come out after losing the finals and just absolutely kill people. And you were right. I think that was, they obviously had the most wins in the NBA by 8. Memphis was second with 56 last year. So, yeah. But you were basically predicting them to have the best record in the NBA, best record in the West. I thought they'd be very good. I think I still went over on them to have 51 wins. So you've got a nice little track record on this. I'll let you take it first here then.
I'm still probably going to be a little on the higher side. Obviously, there's going to be some regression to the mean, and I don't think they're going to go as hard in the regular season as they did last year. So I'm going 55 and 27.
Yeah, you know, it just, you wonder what it would be that would cause them to regress. If anything, mm-hmm. I mean, I think they had better than average health a year ago. Like CP basically played every game, and Bridges played basically every game, and nobody missed like super significant time. I think Bridges or Booker was in the high 60s, so they could have worse health. They probably will have slightly worse health. If Paul misses time, I think they do need to come up with another solution as a ball handler. Like Payne will need to bounce back.
Could be good for their playoff outlook. Just having, you know, just being able to play like that.
Sure.
Won't be good for their regular season win number, though.
I think they're going to be, and I don't know if they have it in them to really boost the three. It just doesn't seem like that's necessarily the mentality of any of these guys really wanting to boost the three-pointers from the front office down to, which is interesting because James Jones was one of the all-time, like, only take a three. Like, I think he went like 6 or 7 years without ever dunking the ball in his time. But Monty, I don't think, you know, comes from that Spurs system where they haven't like really emphasized just straight up bombing from the outside. Like they want to just move the ball, get good shots. If it's a three, fine. CP, we talked about him. Bridges, not really that aggressive. So I don't know if that's going to change too much. I mean, 55 seems pretty good though. I gotta say, I think their defense is gonna regress.
Yeah.
I'll go 54 wins for these guys. Okay. But I think, you know, they could easily win high 50s again. Like that was about where their point differential was. They're gonna be good in the clutch. Like I think at full strength, this is gonna look like a high, you know, about the same team that they had last year. They're gonna have charge back now. It's just, I think they're gonna kind of throttle it back a little bit. And that's why I would lower their estimate.
Yeah. And they should throttle it back.
Are there any matchups that you particularly like or don't like for them in the West playoff?
I mean, I think the Clippers will be a tough matchup just with all their athleticism and then having two big wings like Kawhi and Paul George. So I think that's one that would be tough. I actually like the Denver matchup.
Me too.
Maybe it's because we just saw them have a pretty easy sweep 2 years ago, but Ayton does a decent enough job on Jokic straight up, and they just killed Michael Porter Jr. When the Suns were on offense, Nuggets were on defense. Obviously, Jamal Murray will change things a decent bit, but I feel like that's one matchup I'd take the Suns.
I think I feel the same way on that one. Just against a team that's this heavy in pick and roll, it's just the Jokic problem just becomes, I think, untenable. Now, I could easily see Denver just outscoring them in that series.
Oh, sure.
Possibly, but Ayton is just about the best guy, I think, to guard Jokic. Where now Jokic, it'll be a lot easier for him with Ayton having to deal with Jamal Murray coming off the pick and roll and then having to recover to Jokic, but I still think he's one of the best there. Golden State, I think I like Golden State pretty well. Again, just like Golden State's defensive versatility, like I'm not sure that CP can beat a switch with some of their best guys at this point in time. I don't think the Suns have a great schematic way to deal with Steph when he starts getting on the ball. So I don't like that matchup. I think I'd probably pick Golden State there. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're the champs. I think the Suns could play them pretty well. And again, I think that series would come down to what Ayton does really on both ends. Because yeah. I don't feel like they have a great matchup for Ayton when he's on offense either. But he's not often shown that aggressiveness to just kind of take over a series. I don't know if he necessarily could or would do that. And then, yeah, defensively, he'd just be the key to can he stay on Steph for a few seconds or is he just going to be barbecue chicken there? So I think Ayton would be the key. But I'd agree. I'd probably say the Warriors in a long series at this point.
Yeah. And I think who had home court in that it would be important. Yeah. If the Suns had home court, that might change things. Let's see, who else do we need to talk about? That's probably about it as far as like upper, yeah. like Dallas, I think I'm not as worried about now. Like I thought Brunson was a big part of the matchup problem there.
Definitely.
Maybe Dallas will make a move that'll change, but Dallas is just going to be playing, I think, a lot more conventionally this year. And that plays into the Suns' hands to me. So I'm not necessarily going to say the Suns would win that series for sure, but I don't think they match up particularly poorly with Dallas in some of the ways that they did a year ago. Yeah, so I think that's about
it. Honestly, I don't love the Pelicans matchup. I mean, who knows what they'll be, but I think that would at least, not saying they'd lose to them, but I think that would be a tough matchup just for having to handle Zion and then still having the big guy on top of it. So I think that, I actually think New Orleans is going to be a lot better next year. So I think that would at least be, I'm not saying I'd still probably pick the Suns, but I think that's one that would give them trouble.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I got to start thinking more about what this Pels team is going to be. That's why we do all these outlooks.
Yes.
What do you think? Probably like you would pick a hard fought second round loss as the most likely outcome at this point?
At this point, I still think they're going to be aggressive in the trade market. So I think there's a decent chance that changes. But yeah, like a second round loss to the Clippers probably sounds about right. But as you know, there's a range of outcomes.
I mean, I think if I had to pick anyone to have the best record in the West this year, it'd probably be them, though.
Yeah. Yep.
So
we said the same thing last year, and we're right.
Who did I have as the top record in the West last year? It's a great question. Oh, yes, of course. The LA Lakers with 54 wins.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. you weren't the only one who was wrong with that one.
I had the Suns at number two with 51 wins.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I had the Jazz as the best record in the West. 56, then Lakers 54, Suns 51 was third.
Okay.
Don't pay attention to me. Just unsubscribe right now is the lesson there. All right, man. Well, you're still doing work on NBA Today, I assume?
Yes, I am. Year two coming up. So we've been on hiatus, and actually the show will be back on Wednesday, tomorrow, from when we're filming this, taping this. So, it's good to get the season under our belt. Did a few things differently from the jump. We really used our studio a lot more. So be fun to see what we have in store for year two.
Awesome. All right. So you can check that out during the day. It's 5 days a week, right?
Yep.
All right. So check that out on ESPN. Great accompaniment. And we will talk to you all very soon here. We'll have more season outlooks coming very shortly. Till then.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.